Welcome to 5 minutes of insight on the topic of the relationship between matter and mass. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. At school, you'll be given vague examples of what includes matter, and you'll be given examples of what includes mass. Mass particularly has a unit associated with it of the kilogram, the SI unit of the kilogram, or kg. And at a certain point, they will give you your definition that mass is the amount of matter in an object. Now, this is a very loose explanation between the two, and in this 5 minutes, I'm trying to give you a background, a distinction between matter and mass. Now, matter is very much a shopping list in an object. An object will contain some matter, and the matter is basically a shopping list of particles inside that object. So, as far as we're practically concerned, it's the number of atoms of different types inside that atom, inside that object. And you add it all up, and that gives you a shopping list. And so, matter being conserved means that you can only rearrange the atoms normally. But let's go back into the history of what matter is. Well, it starts off with the ancient Greeks, and I'm just going to give you a 5 minute insight here. There was the Athens was under threat from Sparta. They had a person called Academus who came up and sweet talked them, the Spartans, off and sent them around the outside of Athens to work out what were going on. They realized they had a new military resource, which is fast talkers, and so rather than actually reward them, they sort of sidelined them, giving him a house to live in, and that was the house of Academus, or an academy. And so what happened is the Greeks, although the history goes up, the philosophers were the major people, in practicality the philosophers were a side resource that society ignored, and they were able to be brought out as a resource to solve problems from time to time. They're sort of like the R&D department of the ancient world. Then we come up to Plato, or Socrates. Socrates first. He was in the academy. This is an occupant of the house of Academus. If you're looking into it, he was very much... people listened to him. He had followers, but in general, Greek society sidelined him, and he eventually committed suicide. His student Plato came up with the idea of what exactly philosophy was about, and that concepts had components or atoms inside them called forms, the theory of forms. So he believed that your soul, before it came into the body that you lived in, floated around and came into contact with the ideal form of things. So the ideal form was the conceptual basis of an idea. So a concept linked ideas, and the actual ideas were related to forms. And he had the theory of forms, and this was very much the basis of his work on the Republic and various other things where he discussed the implication of having this theory of forms. So ideally, you would see something, and that would be something trying to approximate your ideal form. So you'd have somewhere in your pre-birth, you'd experience the table. Then when you're walking around the place, you'd see a table, but that table would be a poor rendition of the idea of forms. The philosopher after it, and we're getting towards matter very quickly, is Aristotle, and he converted this more into, if you'd like to, he was really the first software engineer, so he converted software into a formal working engine, and so he took the form and included it in a system of four causes. Now, just really quickly, so this is where we're getting pretty quickly towards matter. So he said there are four causes. The first cause was the form, which is sort of the three-dimensional envelope in which an object is contained, the shape of something. The second form was the actual matter or the stuffing inside of it, and that is our first idea of what matter is. And he said it consisted of five elements, earth, fire, air, water, ether. Ether is in the celestial realm. And he said you've got basically these five piles of things, and they're mixed together to go inside your form as matter. So you've got the three-dimensional space, and it's like a mold you pour in your matter. And then he had two other causes. One was the cause on how it was actually made, which is equivalent to it, the person who actually manufactured it, and its final use. Now, essentially, this is not the sort of the way that we physical sciences work, but this is more like a filing system. If I have an object, I can actually go to this file and organize my thoughts. So it's more like a thought organizer. Now, he used the word matter. He used the Greek word for wood. This translated over to the Romans, and the Roman word for wood came from the origin, the meaning of their meaning of wood. So essentially, out of a piece of wood, you could carve anything you wanted. So to make the form. So this means origin, and so they said matter is mother matter. So matter means the mother. So that's an interesting aspect. And matter meant in this context the wood, which filled in a form. So this is your overall idea, that matter is a conceptual shopping list. And if you imagine you're going to the modern day shopping, automated checkout, as you buy an item, you take it off your shopping list, and an item gets put on a set of scales, and it measures the mass of an object. So matter is a conceptual shopping list. And of course, we've had a basic conceptual shopping list and two of items that we can get available commercially. There are some other items associated with matter which you don't normally have access. So that is dark matter and antimatter. So they are things which have mass but are not routinely associated with matter. So the amount of matter in something is the construction of atoms in it. And the conservation of matter in chemistry means that the chemicals on your left hand, the atoms on your left hand, the type and quantity on your left hand of the equation has to be equal to the right hand of the equation. No atom has been created or destroyed. So we come up to the idea of what mass is. Now mass, a matter is an ancient concept from around 400 BC. Matter is 900 AD from Giles of Rome. Now he was following the process of St. Thomas Aquinas had said, look, I really like Aristotle, I'm going to mix Aristotle and the church together. So when he did mix this together, they had a whole series of conceptual problems. One of the conceptual problems was, how could you have the transubstantiation? This is in the Christian religion. There is a belief that in the mass, when you get some bread that bread and wine actually physically transforms into the flesh and blood of God. I know it sounds strange, but ninth century case, they were investigating Aristotelian heresies. These people who were legitimately following the church are coming up with these mad ideas, saying that this cannot possibly be true. To make it possibly true, Giles of Rome said, look, there has to be another item besides what's in the shopping list which has to be conserved. And he came up with the idea of mass. He didn't actually call it mass. It was Newton back in 1600s that came across, and he said, look, there's this quantity which is related to the density and volume. That is the actual weight of something compared to its given that you've got its density and its volume, you can get the mass. He had it. And then he umnard for a while if you read through his work and said, look, point back to this Giles of Rome. So there's the idea of this mass. So this mass really was a conceptual thought bubble which was sitting around the place trying to solve one theological problem, but eventually solved some physics problems. So mass is actually a number associated, and we now know up with the Higgs boson its origin, we say that's mass is a number that which we associate with matter. So if I have 10 atoms, weighs 10 U. U is the basic unit of mass. So the fundamental unit of mass is called the U. So I have 10 atoms, and if I have a nuther bag containing the same type of atoms and it weighs 20 U, I can say there's 20 atoms there. But it's not actually true that mass is a direct guide to the quantity of something. So if I have an electron and I fire it in an old cathode ray tube out of a TV, it will start off light, but as it accelerates, it will increase in mass. So there's all these attributes. If I have a kilogram of apples in my hand in a bag, I swing it around my head such quickly fast, such as it goes to a fraction of the speed of light, the effect of mass dilation will increase the equivalent mass there, but matter won't change, because matter is a conceptual counting tool. It's like a shopping list. Mass is a mathematical result due to the amount of hypercharge, mass hypercharge of particles, their condition, and what we're doing to them at the time. So mass is something which is a number in kilograms that we measure. Now, the first way that we can... There are four common ways of measuring mass, and these are the four basic equations of mass. Until a couple of years ago, before the Higgs boson, my knowledge of mass was its mass is like a beautiful woman at a party. You hear about it, but as you arrive at the party, it's left some implications and moved on. So the four equations of mass are, and these are the simplified equations, F equals M times A, force equals mass times acceleration. Acceleration is something you can measure. Force and mass are two units which co-define each other. So F equals MA is one. E equals MC squared. So the amount of mass in an object is the amount of energy that you can release if you add antimatter matter to it. The amount of mass is the force an object will experience in a gravitational field. And there's a final thing that the scale, this is quantum mechanics, the final thing which adds in how mass describes our entire physical world, is that if something is more massive, it will actually be smaller in scale. That's right. And this is the four things. So let's go through the four equations of mass. F equals MA, E equals MC squared, F equals G, mass of the planet, mass of object on R squared, and finally quantum mechanics, the curvature of the wave function is inversely proportional to the mass. So if something is more massive, it's more tiny, and you have the de Broglie wavelengths across there. So we'll just have a quick tour of something. So matter says the number of atoms or the electrons, the actual number I have there. Mass is the actual reading I get out of an instrument. So if I have a milk carton and I have the big kilogram from the K, which I think we've dropped now, the 1K from the from Paris, the big K, and I put a spring between the two, and I put it out in space, and I release the spring. I can measure the eventual speed of both the kilogram and my milk carton, and I actually can determine that my milk carton is inertially equivalent to 1 kilogram. Now, this is just an aside that we have eventually used Planck's constant and other theories to actually free us from an actual physical kilogram of a mass. And so what's happened is that mass in Paris was defined as 1 with no decimal points. And sometime this year, I think, we added the decimal point, and that kilogram of Paris, in Paris, the K, the special K in Paris, was no longer special, and we've added the decimal point to it, and it's now allowed to drift off the 1 kilogram, as the kilograms are now defined by equations. So that's F equals ma, the kilogram, equivalent kilogram and a mass. The other way is the actual putting the mass in a gravitational field and seeing the force which is exerted, and doing a series of calculations associated with that. So that is putting mass on a series of scale balances. The other mass, and we have to remember this, is the E equals mc squared. So if I get a kilogram of milk and I have an antimatter kilogram, I put the two together, measure the size of the equations, the size of the explosion, and that will tell me the amount of mass in there. So that's my measure of mass. Now, going back, I won't in this time describe mass hypercharge and the Higgs boson scalar field, which explains a lot of what's going on. Now, finally, we've got our next experiment. We want to actually see the mass of our milk carton. And although it's not going to be a very accurate thing, we can actually get a whole series of milk cartons and throw them at a double slit. And at the end, we can measure the diffraction pattern of milk cartons at the other end. And from that, we can actually measure the mass of our milk carton. Now, that's obviously it's reciprocal stuff. It's going to be the heavier it is, the smaller it is going to be, and it becomes so small it's really difficult to do. But we can definitely do that for electrons or something very light. We can actually measure the diffraction pattern of the other side, and that diffraction pattern is the wavelength, and it's related to the mass. The mass associated with it, the Schrödinger wave equation. Now, this final aspect of mass, so in the light of the bigger it is, it means that electrons are actually quite big. And if you have some rice bubbles, and if you can imagine one of those, I think, called rice bubble crunchies, it's kofa and rice balls put together, that is a good example of what the Earth is like. We've got all these electrons, which are very large, and they're like rice bubbles, and we're actually standing on a rice bubble sphere of electrons on Earth. So let's go back and finish this off very soon. This is going to be 5 minutes, but it's taken a bit more than 5 minutes. So matter is a shopping list. Mass, in the most primitive form, we've got a really good form. We can actually associate it with mass charge. Or hypercharge and Higgs bosons, but more practically, mass is something that we get out of a number that we get out of an experiment, which is linked back finally to we can deduce the matter, amount of matter, from this number that we measured. The experiments that we can use is inertial mass, that is in a you imagine as two skaters, they push themselves away, the lighter skater will go much further, the fat skater, big fat male skater, won't go as far. He'll go back and the light person will off. So you can see the mass from there. The other one is basically how you're affected by gravity. Equals mc squared, you go to CERN and you actually get your mass and you add antimatter to it. So unfold. That's, again, interesting. And finally, you can diffract your thing, and that will also give you your mass. And so these are all numbers associated with matter. The idea of shopping list and experimental number. So one is a conceptual basket, which is associated with an object. The amount of mini objects in an object in space, and it's got a historical basis in the ancient Greeks. The other one has a historical basis, more walking out backwards. I don't know how they actually came up with it. They had sort of basically this sort of junk idea from the Dark Ages. It was taken by Newton, and bit by bit we have borrowed mass and got a sort of fairly unified a theory of the importance of mass in physics. It's sort of the fundamental binding idea. And more recently, we have got a theory of mass and essentially how our objects that we have in space, that space is this property which can transmit light, and mass can have the property of gravity in it. And because it's a vector field, it's superconducting for objects. So like electrons travel forever in a superconductor, our universe is a superconductor for mass. I hope I have at least piqued your interest here. And again, I thought I'd be able to, rather than actually data dump too much information, I'd be able to simplify this, but even this has been a long explanation. So welcome to my life, where I suppose I don't speak to too many people. I just read and think and put things together, have a few conversations with people, and they say, oh, you're wrong. Oh, all right, thank you very much. And I just continue to read and think. So this is hopefully something which can assist you to understand more deeply the difference between mass and matter. Thanks for listening. And in the meantime, keep on doing science.